Any comments or questions on what did I learn?
That's obviously not a good question, yeah. So what did you learn?
What did I learn?
Oh, is this a practice?
Yes. Well, I did, yeah, it was just sort of a bit of a debrief, really. What did I learn? I think I learned that, however, the key is to stick to the questions in exactly the same word order as you've given them to us. And even if you don't really ask quite the right question at the right time, each question in itself has a powerful effect.
We do a little exercise a little later on the effect of the questions in resonance, and I've just worked with a group of physicists and engineers, and someone just called me last night about. He's altered his wording to this sort of pattern, and so the kind of resonance in the use of the words actually sets up a sort of physical dimension which goes inside a lot easier than normal conversation I'm talking now. So I'll do a little exercise where I'll ask you the sounds to draw what that feels or what you sense with the different words, so that you can see that the rhythm is what actually goes into that inner world. Otherwise it just becomes conversational and none of it's there. So we'll develop that theme a little while as well. Okay, so what did you learn? If you grab that mic and we'll go around.
As part of the learning, I was trying to gauge how much time I should give the client to respond, and whether I had to restate the question again, because sometimes it was some time before they responded. What would you recommend in that situation?
Sometimes it depends on. Perhaps the rhythm and how slowly you asked your question, because if you ask it too fast, then the client has to repeat it to themselves, and then you know it's not going to go in the same way as if you restate it. If you ask a really good question, it sets up a process of engagement in which they become very intimately involved in their inner processing. And so you give them all the time they need to do that. And the cue is, if they look at you, then you know they've come out. But if they're just staring into space, then the question unloads or downloads the information into space. So you're expecting the space you've created to hold all of that stuff. All you need to know is just the name. So as long as you have the name of that space, then it carries all that information. So particularly if it's a metaphor, then you just have the name of the metaphor. And a metaphor comes from the Greek root of metaphora. And a metaphora is part of the root of amphora. And an amphora is a vase or a container that has a round bottom. So an amphora is for carrying something from one place to another. And that's what a metaphor is. It's something where you pick up information. So a metaphor is where you pick up information in a container and you carry it across from one place to another. So what you're doing is you ask these questions, normally in a social or mentoring situation. You ask questions so that you can understand the nature of the problem. In this process, it's completely the opposite. You ask questions so that it downloads into the space, which then becomes the container of that information. And for the time that that space is enlivened, it's psychoactive, then it will hold all that information. And for that time that you can keep that your client doesn't have to. So particularly if they're conflicted, I mean, how many times have you heard, well, a part of me thinks this is a really good idea, but, well, you know, this is a split thing. And so the conflict is, in their you, they have to hold two opposing and mutually exclusive ideas. Well, you can find a space that will allow or hold the information from one idea and another space that will hold exactly the opposite. And in that way, then, for those moments when you've downloaded those two opposing views in space and you can move them to somewhere else, they're actually free of that conflict. And from there they can get a different view of the nature of the problem or the issue than when they're conflicted and split with these two parts. So your question could be, if you didn't quite get it right, then it's a slow process. If you do, then they're really engaged. And so even though it doesn't seem as though much is happening to you, if the space is working, you've got the mojo working, as it were, then it's all going to go there and it's going to form these sort of ephemeral, virtual, 3D hallucinatory realities that are maintained in front, out in space. So it's a bit like unpacking, you know, all the stuff in here and laying it out in a space where you have a different perspective, a different scaling of the problem, and therefore it invites a different relationship.
Yeah, I found you had to guard against going too far, because if you were working on sort of in a sort of structured way of three questions to move people on, you didn't want to actually So if you're dealing with A, you didn't want to pursue A too far, because you might find that you're getting all the way through to the conclusion with A without having actually situated it with B and C. And I found when we were practicing one of the exercises afterwards that there was a temptation to, I can see the end here and move on without, you know, we've got to wait. We've got to actually do this in a proper way so that we actually get the whole three-dimensional aspect of it.
Yes, that there's a really interesting phenomena about sample theory, which basically says if you take a sine wave, which is a wave that looks like that, and you want to take the information that's in that wave and transport it to somewhere else, then what's the minimum number of pieces of that wave that you need to take? And it turns out it's 2.3. So in order to ensure that if you sample a piece of this wave, because it's too much to take it all, so if you start with, somebody would have to download the whole life story, it could take weeks and weeks. So when you're sampling a part of it, you need to sample 2.3 to ensure the accuracy that they've translated the stuff that's inside them is going to sit in space. So that's about roughly averaging between 2 to 3 questions. And in doing that, that will go into the space and the space will hold it. If you start, so if you think of it as a little kind of deformity in the space that information just sits on, name, address, serial number. And it sits there. Now, if you ask a few more questions, what will happen is it deforms that space, and all of a sudden you've got quite a big hole there. Loads of interesting information, but it all would all be inside that containment of the space of A, for example. And then you'll find it's really hard to get out of there, because the more information, let's say the deeper it goes, you have to get a certain amount of energy to escape out of there, to find some other information that belongs to a system. So if you ask any more than that, then what will happen is it'll go like a microscope, and you'll get down and you'll get amazingly interesting stuff, but it's not likely, you will not engage the system in terms of solving the problem. You'll engage a little part of them that's in there, and that's for a different type of experience. So that's about the right amount of questions. You do have to have a variation between 2 to 3 questions, and that lightly places it in space so that you can move on very easily. So that's that shift from A, B, and C. So that's what the difference in this notion of clean coaching is about, being able to discriminate where all the information is in the system, so that you can actually gather n number of data points, which would be, n has to at least equal 6 generally. So it's got to be greater than 6, and if you get it right, then something's going to happen, because it's what we'd term, or I term, a network solution. You've networked these spaces together, and so the wisdom and the network comes together rather, and that's not additive in terms of, right, we'll add this bit of information so you know that, and you know this, let's add it together, and then you come out with a solution. So an emergent solution doesn't occur like that, because each bit of space or information you get is usually going to be unrelated. So it doesn't make sense, because you want to get to there, and all of a sudden you've got a space that's behind you, or way out to the left or to the right. How's that going to help you get there? Well, that's what a network does. Otherwise you'd have a direct path or a direct line of information which would get you from A to B. So a network solution is like that old Irish saying, you ask anybody in Ireland, how do you get from where you are to where you want to go? And then they give you this very complicated direction, and then they change it a little bit and say, well, that's a quicker way if you go that way. And so after about 5 to 10 minutes of those directions, then the last parting phrase is, well, I wouldn't go there from here if I was you. So this going to A to B is a bit like that. And so you're counting on setting up this network in this particular, using this particular operation, which is you're going to set up a network solution and move from one space to another. So that's the difference. If you drop down in there, then you're going to be stuck there for quite a while, because it's actually quite hard to get out.